Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. After decades of racial injustice, we may be seeing a new spirit in the U.S. focusing on racial equity. We're seeing tentative steps in many aspects of life, from housing to healthcare, education to jobs. But trying to balance a system that has been out of whack for so long, where does one start? How does a city, a community, a neighborhood begin to scale such an enormous task? Today, we're learning how some faith-based organizations and healthcare professionals are tackling the hard work. In a few minutes, we'll hear about ways that racism is being addressed as a public health crisis. First, joining us is Leah Gilmore. You know her name and probably her voice from her notable career as a jazz, blues, and gospel vocalist, writer, and activist. This year, she's added another title to her resume, Minister for Racial Justice and Multicultural Engagement at Govan's Presbyterian Church in Baltimore, where she's also been music director for a year and a half. Gilmore was named by Essence magazine as one of 25 women shaping the world and is a past winner of the Blues Foundation's Keeping the Blues Alive Award for her historical work on women's contribution to the blues. She served as the deputy director of the ACLU of Maryland, and 3 years ago, the Jazz Journalists Association deemed her the 2018 Baltimore Jazz Hero for her work in music and social justice. Welcome to On the Record, Leah.
Well, thank you so much, Sheila. I'm thrilled to be here with you.
And also with us is Reverend Tom Harris, who's been serving the Govan's Presbyterian congregation since 2006, where he's dedicated to biblical-based social justice advocacy. Welcome, Reverend Harris.
Thank you, Sheila. Thank you for having us.
Pastor Harris, give us an idea of the people who make up the Govan's congregation and also the neighborhood that surrounds the church on York Avenue.
Well, that's a great question right off the bat, because those two things are not exactly the same. In fact, they're fairly different. The church itself is majority white in the 90% range, majority older, middle-aged to older. And the neighborhood around us is a typical Baltimore neighborhood where it's divided and segregated racially and economically. So on one side of York Road in our backyard, we have Homeland and some fairly wealthy white folks mostly. And on the other side of York Road, we have Woodburn McCabe and other parts of Govan's, which is majority Black and majority lower income. And so our church does not look like our neighborhood. And that's one of the things that has brought us to this conversation with you today.
Leah, what led to the role of Minister for Racial Justice and Multicultural Engagement?
I would really say that it is Tom's leadership and just our discussions about, you know, racial justice and how it is so imperative that the church be involved in anti-racist actions at all times and in a systematic way and, you know, in a very direct and meaningful way. And so Tom said, yeah, why don't we create a minister for racial justice? I said, yeah, why don't I be that? It was just a great, great thing. And I am absolutely thrilled that we are moving forward in a quick way, but in a very meaningful way as well.
Well, tell me more about what that role entails.
First, we had to figure out what our mission actually is as a racial justice ministry. So we sat back and we did some really deep thinking and plotting, and we realized that we need to educate our congregation so that they can become ambassadors for anti-racism and so that they can able to confront their own racist ideal beings and also move past it, get uncomfortable, and get comfortable with the language of anti-racism. So it really is us just really sitting down and thinking how to move forward and not rushing. There is no deadline to this, you know, that we believe we have to be very focused, but also offer the opportunity for organic happenings as well.
That's Leah Gilmore, Minister for Racial Justice and Multicultural Engagement at Govan's Presbyterian Church in Baltimore. Also with us is Reverend Tom Harris. This is On the Record on WYPR. We're talking about the church's racial justice initiatives within the congregation and the surrounding community. I'm Sheila Cast. So, Pastor Harris, what kind of programming are you doing to carry out the racial justice education and outreach?
Well, you know, when white people want to confront racial justice, they have a book study. And guess what we're doing? And that's what we kind of knew that. And so it's interesting because there is that tension. We're like, no, let's take action. And Leah has helped us say, no, you all need to do some work. You can't just go and march if you want, go to Annapolis if you want. But to do anti-racism work is deeply personal, internal work within each member of the church and within the congregation as a whole. And so we've done these intensive studies on white fragility, how to be an anti-racist, and then CAST, yes, with Isabel Wilkerson. And so we've basically a year of weekly in-depth studies that have been wonderfully attended, I think partly because people are so able to attend these things through Zoom, it's helped with attendance. And then Leah has now organized one of our largest and the most active committees already, the Racial Justice Working Group, and they're just getting started in their work. They've been only started since January.
Leah, what would you add to the kind of programming you're doing?
As Pastor Tom said, that, you know, before we could go out, you know, waving our flag of justice, we need to educate our folks, and we need to educate our greater community so that the community understands that we're not doing this because it's cachet at the moment. We're doing this because it's the right thing to do. And as Christians, it is the right thing to do. But, you know, and we want to provide opportunities in a safe environment for, you know, our parishioners to openly share their thoughts and feelings about racism, because this is a difficult conversation for many people. So our programming allows, or we hope it allows, for folks to have the opportunity to talk about things that they don't necessarily talk about. And until we talk about and discuss with each other, nothing's going to happen. There'll be no change.
Is music part of this ministry?
Of course, music is such a pivotal part, but because really, we don't laugh in black, we don't cry in white. We have a spiritual connection that music offers, is the conversation to connect us. So at Govins, we've realized that, you know, exposing our congregation to traditions from different cultures that may not be readily available within the church's own tradition has been such a boon. We've also created Music Mondays at Govins, and that is a cross-cultural program. We've welcomed African-American music, Appalachian music. This coming Monday, there'll be someone joining us from Belgium live. So like Tom said, the Zoom has offered us the opportunity to welcome so many folks into our sanctuary.
Pastor Harris, what's been the response from the congregation?
I'd say the response has been overwhelmingly positive. It hasn't been without some struggles. I mean, we're confronting white supremacy. And, you know, that's not just Nazis waving flags out in the streets. Right. White supremacy is something that's baked in. You know, we, like I said earlier, we have a mostly white church in a majority black city. And so what that tells me is that there are obstacles that we can't see in the church that have kept people of color from walking into our doors and staying there. And so part of this work is confronting, you know, that. And that's hard because you're confronting unconscious bias and unconscious prejudice. You're confronting invisible structures.
And unconscious prejudice still reaps the same results. Mm-hmm. I think what is great with what is happening with Govins now is that my being there in my extravagant and very outward and open blackness, and conceptually and factually, is that they see me in a leadership position, which did not necessarily exist before, because we can say how we want to be, you know, anti-racist. We can say how we want to be inclusive. We can say how we want to confront prejudices. But until our actions really reflect our wants and needs, is it real? And I think that's what the programming and Tom's commitment to this and the congregation's commitment with all of the hiccups that are going to come with doing this type of work is pivotal.
And that's why that's one of the reasons we wanted to, when we created the position, it's not, Leah is not a program director. Leah is a minister. We wanted her to be in a leadership, a spiritual leadership role. And so that's part of the position we created for her.
Well, are your neighbors, is the surrounding community involved in the programming? Do they attend the programs?
Yes, this is very much our goal. Unfortunately, COVID did a number on, you know, our lives across the board. But fortunately, Zoom has allowed us to reach out and have our neighbors and our neighbors from around the world and around our own city to be involved.
And Leah, there's a speaker series event coming up on Saturday. Tell us about that.
Yes, this coming Saturday is Sherita Cole Brown. And what she's going to be discussing is the mental health in African-American communities and communities of color.
Pastor Harris, what do you hope comes from this work over time?
I hope that we are become an anti-racist church. And so I hope that we become a church that is not just, in Kendi's terminology, not racist, but that we know that racism is baked into our culture, and to fight it, we all have to be anti-racist. We all have to be working against it. I hope that we can become a less white space, a space that is less has less obstacles for people of color to come and participate, so that the church can begin to look more like the community. And I hope that we can make a real difference. You know, one of the things that the racial justice working group is looking at is truth and reconciliation work. So looking at our history and looking at the ways that Govins has benefited from racism over the years, and other churches in our community are doing that. And part of it's just being open to the Spirit. Part of it is saying, we're going to focus on this work. We're going to do it with humility and earnestness and commitment. And we're going to let the Spirit lead us where she will.
And Leah, briefly, what is your long-term hope?
My long-term hope is for the Govins community to shine as the incredibly progressive, loving community that it is, and for us, for Govins, just to be a representation and a model for other churches to invite people in by doing the good work and the needed work.
Thank you both, and good luck with this.
Thank you. Thank you,
Sheila,
for having us.
Leah Gilmore is a jazz, blues, and gospel vocalist, writer, and activist. She's also Minister for Racial Justice and Multicultural Engagement at Govins Presbyterian Church in Baltimore, and she's music director there. Reverend Tom Harris is senior pastor at Govins Church. We've been talking about the church's education and outreach to proactively address racial justice issues within their congregation and to engage with the surrounding community. Quick break on the record. And then we'll talk about how the idea that racism should be considered a public health crisis is catching on. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about inventive ways Marylanders are tackling racial inequity and structural racism. We heard from the Minister for Racial Justice and Multicultural Engagement at Govins Presbyterian Church in Baltimore, Leah Gilmore, and its senior pastor, Tom Harris. Joining us now is Dr. Nicole Rochester. She's founder and CEO of Your GPS Doc, a service to help people navigate the healthcare system and advocate within it. She'll participate in the panel discussion called Racism as a Public Health Issue, which is part of the 2021 Maryland State of Reform Health Policy Conference taking place today. Welcome to On the Record, Dr. Rochester.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why did you start Your GPS Doc?
So I'm a pediatrician by training, and I realized when I became a caregiver to my late father that my viewpoint and my experiences with the healthcare system were somewhat idealistic. And as a caregiver, I just discovered how difficult it is to navigate the healthcare system. As a pediatrician, I have been accustomed to, you know, dealing with families and talking with parents and extended family and acknowledging that they were literally part of the medical team as we cared for children. But when I was kind of thrust into the adult world with my dad, I learned that that's not really standard. And so there were so many instances where, as his daughter, I was completely ignored, despite the fact that I had a lot of valuable information to offer about his condition and about his care. And pretty quickly, I learned that my being a physician not only was an advantage in terms of the knowledge that I had about medicine and the healthcare system, but unfortunately, when I began to share with my father's medical providers that I was a physician, it changed everything. And I was suddenly, you know, considered a more respected member of the team. I was listened to more attentively. And ultimately, I believe that my dad received better care because of that. And that was great for him and for my family, but that angered me because there are over 45 million family caregivers in the United States, most of whom don't have a daughter or a close family member who's a physician. And so after he passed away, I just couldn't shake the feeling that, you know, I needed to help other family caregivers who are struggling to manage their own lives, to take care of their loved ones, and to navigate a healthcare system that is unnecessarily complicated.
So how does the service work?
So I work primarily with individuals who are caring for either their adult parents, their aging parents or other aging relatives. And essentially they hire me for a variety of reasons. Sometimes I am the medical interpreter where I am helping them literally understand, you know, the medical records, serving as a liaison between the healthcare team and the patient and their family members so that they understand what's going on. That could include attending appointments, you know, now mostly virtually. It also involves helping them sometimes find second opinions, ensuring that they are receiving appropriate medical care for their condition, helping them anticipate next steps. During hospitalizations, it can be helping to coordinate family meetings and getting all of the providers in one room so that everyone's on the same page, helping individuals find nursing homes or long-term care facilities, home care agencies, really anything and everything related to understanding medical conditions and then really being able to be empowered and educated so that you can show up fully as a member of the healthcare team.
I want to talk about the panel discussion you're participating in at 1 o'clock this afternoon titled Racism as a Public Health Issue. That's how the whole nation heard racism described after George Floyd was killed in Minneapolis in May 2020. The vice president of the Minneapolis City Council, Andrea Jenkins, called on her colleagues to define racism as a public health crisis. And last July, the full council declared it a state of emergency. Why do you see it as important to frame the discussion of racism this way?
It's important to frame racism as a public health emergency because it really underlies all of the racial disparities that we see throughout the country. You know, when I trained in medical school in the 90s, we were told repeatedly about the different outcomes that African Americans have when it comes to, you know, every disease, heart disease, diabetes, cancer. But we were never told why. And there was this implication that either Black people were genetically inferior or that they just didn't take good care of their health. And so it wasn't until recently that we are finally beginning to delve into the roots of these disparities. And the reality is that even if we look at social determinants of health, which, you know, underlie a lot of the reasons why we see these differences in health outcomes, those themselves have racism at their core. The fact that many Black Americans don't have access to living wages, the fact that they don't have access to housing and safe areas, and they don't have access to fresh fruits and vegetables and healthy foods. All of those things have racism at the root. And so I think that this is long overdue. And I'm happy. I mean, it's sad that, you know, that is the reason, but I'm encouraged that we are finally beginning to address the root of the problem. And so I think that, you know, declaring racism as a public health emergency and focusing our efforts, our attention, and money is really going to be what it takes for us to finally start to, you know, close the gap in health outcomes between Black Americans and our counterparts.
That's Dr. Nicole Rochester on the record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. She founded and runs Your GPS Doc, which helps people navigate and advocate within the healthcare system. We're talking about ideas she plans to share in a panel discussion today called Racism as a Public Health Issue. It's part of the 2021 Maryland State of Reform Health Policy Conference. So tell me more about how does thinking about racism in the context you laid out as a public health issue, how does that alter the discussion?
Well, I think that like with any other problem, you can't solve it until you understand the cause. And I think that what we have done in healthcare over the last few decades is that we have taken an open surgical wound and we've applied a Band-Aid to it. And, you know, that's never going to solve the problem. You know, this requires surgical intervention, you know, just to use medical terms. We really need to understand the root causes, and then we need to figure out how to dismantle those root causes. And so what has happened is that we've created solutions to address healthcare disparities that have not addressed racism and bias. And until we do that, the problem is not going to go away.
And you've worked in healthcare more than 20 years. What in particular do you think it's going to take to break down some of the barriers that uphold racial inequality in the healthcare system?
I think that it's really going to require a dismantling of the entire system, which may sound scary to people and very obviously labor intensive and time intensive, and it will require financial resources. But I think that we literally need to start from the ground up. And so we need to relook at how we train nurses and physicians and other healthcare professionals and how we introduce the topic of racism in medicine and bias. And what are the things that we are teaching our trainees that perpetuate some of these racial biases? You know, there was a study that was published a few years ago that actually demonstrated that about 50% of residents and medical students in this study endorsed false racial beliefs, things like Black people have thicker skin and Black people don't feel pain. And we know that those false beliefs translate into the medical care that Black people receive in this country. And so, you know, we have to look at our medical education, we have to look at our hiring practices. We have to look at increasing representation, not just on the front lines, but in the C-suites of our hospitals and our other healthcare organizations. We have to look at our clinical care policies and protocols. And ultimately, we have to hold healthcare institutions and providers accountable. You know, it should not be acceptable that as a physician, I am providing a different level of care to Black and brown patients. And so we need to address that. We need to measure it, and then we need to hold individuals accountable.
Dr. Rochester, thanks so much for talking to us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Nicole Rochester is founder and CEO of Your GPS Doc, a service to guide people through the healthcare system and advocate for themselves. Dr. Rochester is participating in a panel discussion called Racism as a Public Health Issue at 1 p.m. today. It's part of the 2021 Maryland State of Reform Health Policy Conference. We've got a link to more information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us on the record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.